books.
It is the 18th day of January, and this is our first book pick segment of the new year. And it's and then it'll be weekly from here on out. But we are very thrilled to be back to, you know, hippity-hoppitying off to different places and getting great book lists. This morning, we talk with our good friends Eve and Heather from Battenkill Books in Cambridge, New York, for our book picks list. After spending lots of time of reading lots of books and studying up, they join us this morning with a terrific list to share. Eve McNeil and Heather Boyne, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure.
Good morning. Thank you very much. We really appreciate being the first people this year.
Well, as it should be. And I thank you
for
doing this. All right. So who and where would we like to begin?
Joe, I think I'm going to go first. This is Heather.
Okay.
I'm limiting my selection of books this week so I can focus on a few titles that really stood out to me. Jason Reynolds, the number one New York Times bestselling author, and his college roommate and friend, Jason Griffin, an illustrator and artist, have collaborated to produce their book, Ain't Burned All the Bright. Now, at first glance, this vividly covered cover suggests that this might be a lighthearted novel. When the book first arrived at the store and we all read it, we had a long discussion about what genre this fell into. Was it a young adult book, a graphic novel, maybe poetry or art? And we decided that it could fit comfortably into all of these categories. At this point, we usually rely on the publisher for guidance, and Athenaeum says, prepare yourself for something unlike anything, a smash-up of art and text for teens that viscerally captures what it is like to be black in America right now. Wow. Wow, that's a tall order for a young adult book. Well, this book totally delivers. It's a broad cultural statement. It's a social commentary. And in fact, in the bookstore, we made the decision to put it in the front window. And all the aesthetic decisions about this book speak to the message it's trying to convey. When you look closely at the cover, although it's brightly colored, it shows a flame in the palm of a black hand. The title written three times in a manic script. Picking it up, you realize it's very heavy. You're aware of the weight when you hold it in your hand. The only thing I can equate it to is the sensation of holding a Bible, the heaviness of a book that is not suggested by its size. Opening it, the book flap reads, "This book was created with Jason Reynolds," using three long sentences, "and Jason Griffin," using 300 pages of a pocket-sized Moleskine notebook. To produce the book's pages, Mr. Griffin's notebook paper page was copied and printed onto a black background, creating a frame around each image, like a frame around a painting. It makes the book look like a facsimile, or a book that has been photographed and reproduced in its original form. An example would be like a facsimile of Shakespeare's First Folio. Knowing what it's like to read the words in Shakespeare in its historical context, the original, unedited form. Ain't Burned All the Bright is tactile. Running your fingers over the cover, you feel the words of the title are raised and they feel taped to the smooth surface. Imagine like a ransom note of words instead of letters. The images are collages, art that's made of attaching pieces of different materials, such as paper. And in this case, even colored duct tape to the flat surfaces. They're layers, painted, printed, drawn, clipped words superimposed. The book begs to be touched, picked up, pondered over. It's sensual. The text evolves slowly with just a few words. Remember, it's only three long sentences, or breaths, as Mr. Reynolds calls them. The poetic telling of a life, the words tumbling, zigging, zagging across the page and forcing you to linger on the image and soak in the words. There's emphasis of rhythm and pace and a mantra ending with in through the nose and out through the mouth. In the final pages, both artists have a short discussion about the creation of this book, and I think it's important to show how the collaboration between two friends works. In a time when collaboration seems scarce, we see how two people find common ground to create a wonderful piece. Asked to describe Ain't Burned All the Bright, the publisher says, Jason Reynolds and his best bud, Jason Griffin, had a mind meld this contemplation manifesto, fierce, vulnerable, gorgeous, what is wrong with humans, hope-filled, searing, eye-poppingly illustrated, how the heck did they come up with this project about oxygen? The subject matter is not easy. It is an emotive reflection on the pronounced threats facing a contemporary black family. But really, we all know what it's like not to be able to breathe freely in our masks now, don't we? I anticipate tremendous buzz around this book as one of the best ofs of the year. So the second book would be one that's been on the best of list for 2021 for children. I know I'm doing two children's books, but they're so good. It's called Make Meatballs Sing, The Life and Art of Coretta Kent, words by Matthew Burgess and pictures by Cara Kramer. You'll be able to find this book because it has a colorful image of a nun silkscreening on the cover. They're fresh, engaging images with some real photographs of Coretta scattered throughout the text. Like some of the other children's picture books we've highlighted on the show, this one is really a book for any age. It contains a chronology, author's notes, illustrator notes, and quotation sources. I found it to be a wonderful jumping-off point for my own exploration of this influential woman artist. So it's the life story of Frances Elizabeth Kent, who was born in 1918, and she grew up in a large creative family who encouraged her to be original. And she took art classes, and she graduated from high school until one day she surprised everyone by making the announcement that she was joining the Order of the Immaculate Heart of Mary. So one of her first duties was to teach elementary school art. She grew talent as a talented teacher and an artist, and she was asked to be part of the art department, where she continued her study and used her style of serigraphy. And serigraphy is silk screening. She fashioned a new word for the style of both play and work she needed to create this art called plork. The title Make Meatballs Sing comes from her work, A Song About Greatness, which she borrowed the slogan for Del Monte tomato sauce that said it could make meatballs sing. And within those letters, creating the word sing, she wrote a psalm from the Bible. So while Andy Warhol was creating his Campbell soup can images in New York City in the 1960s, Sister Coretta was on the West Coast using similar pop references to create bold prints and posters that spoke out about injustice, poverty, and war. She inspired others to stand up for their beliefs, and in her own words, the person who makes things is a sign of hope. So she was on the cover of Newsweek magazine, and at one time she had the largest copyrighted work of art in the world. The Boston Gas Company asked her to paint a gigantic tank on the expressway. For Coretta, the rainbow was a symbol of love and hope and kindness, and the U.S. Post Office in 1983 commissioned her to create her signature love stamp that went on to sell over 700 million stamps. And yet hardly anyone knows her name, and people should. We need to put this amazing book in the hands of our young people who can be inspired by a person who took a non-conventional path. We can introduce a new generation to a person who, despite of or because of her religious affiliation, became an important part of the mid-century art scene. And maybe it will inspire us in the darkest part of this winter to busy our hands and be a sign of hope.
The name of the book is Make Meatballs Sing, The Life and Art of Coretta. Is that how you pronounce it?
Coretta, yeah.
Kent, by Matthew Burgess. The book before that was Ain't Burned All the Bright by Jason Reynolds with artwork by Jason Griffin. All right, Heather, thank you for those two books. We now go to Eve. Eve, where would you like to begin?
All right. Well, I'm going to start with a little bit of anecdotal thinking through what we've been seeing in the store. I think we're all hitting a point where we're juggling a lot. Our attention spans are suffering as a result, and I've heard from a lot of people, myself included, that the reading bit, we're having a hard time. We're sort of hitting some of those familiar roadblocks that we hit at the beginning of the pandemic with attention spans. And so I've been suggesting to a lot of people to step outside of their comfort zone, read something different, try a different genre, try a different author, and finding a lot of joy in that myself. And so starting in an unlikely spot for myself, I'm going to start with the genre of horror, with a book that I encountered a while back. This one actually came out in August. It's called My Heart is a Chainsaw. And it comes to us from Stephen Graham Jones, who is just an incredible writer. And I'm coming to this not as a horror and slasher film huge mega fan, so I found it to be such an interesting exploration. In this one, we meet Jade, who is a 17-year-old half-Indian outcast, as she sort of describes herself. She lives with her father, who's unreliable at best. Her mother, she's estranged from, so she's really in this position of taking care of herself, grows up in this lakeside Idaho town, pretty remote. On one side is some pretty rough and tumble, you know, a community that is familiar to all of us. Onto the other side of this lake is moving in a brand new, super fancy community, ironically called Terra Nova, and the people who are moving into it are all titans of industry, very wealthy, very well-to-do, and this collision is happening on either side of this lake called Indian Lake that is shrouded in all kinds of folklore, spectral visions of a woman who walks the lake edge, and she claims from time to time lives. And our hero, Jade, is completely in love with all of these stories, and she is something of a an expert in the area of slasher films. And so throughout this, you're getting her story in this great little town, and you're getting snippets of these papers she writes for her teacher, who happens to be one of the few sort of stable-feeling adults that shows up in her life. And in it, she's describing all the rules of slasher films, everything from the final girl, which is a hugely important concept. She waxes poetic about how the rules of the game, how the revenge builds, how the body count happens. And I was completely swept up by this character, this voice, and this story. And I found myself contemplating alongside of Jade, what's the shape of fear? And thinking about what we do with fear, and thinking also about fairy tales, folklore, all of these things that, you know, ideally it's something that a child encounters in the comfortable embrace of a parent. You encounter these sort of primal fears, these dangers, and yet you're able to come through it and feel that embrace of an adult. And Jade stands in this light of what does it mean for a child who doesn't have that parental figure to really offer that comfort, that security. And I found myself just breathlessly reading this, rooting for her beyond all hope, and really just breathing into this beautiful, beautiful story and finding it incredibly refreshing. So with that, I'll say step outside of your comfort zone. Maybe try reading something you haven't, and you might just find this unexpected joy, fascination, entertainment.
All right. We have about 2 minutes left.
Okay. So with that, I will just hit one of my others. This one is also takes us to a slightly dark place. It's called Islands of Abandonment by Cal Flynn. In this one, she is taking you to all of these sites of nature that have been touched by human hands, and in some places contaminated, in some places war zones. We go from Scotland, we go to rural Estonia, we go to Verdun, France, Paterson, New Jersey, Detroit, all of them abandoned auto places, like I said, battlefields. And in these, we see incredible devastation, and yet the way that nature is able to creep back in. This is not a precious how nature takes over and victory is won, but one in thinking about how humans and nature really come into this collision. What happens in the space when we are not there, and the ways that nature and environments can respond to being in states of flux. So this one I highly recommend, and again, it's going to take you all over the place, a tiny island off of Scotland, into all of these incredible and strange places. So highly recommend that one if you're interested in history and nature and just unusual stuff.
Excellent. Well, a terrific list of books. There was one that we didn't have time for, but it's on your list and it's on our website. And
indeed,
you can find that at wamc.org/roundtable or at battenkillbooks.com. Eve and Heather, I thank you very much. For more information on Battenkill Books in Cambridge, you can go to their website, again, battenkillbooks.com. And we post each week's list and all of our segments online, wamc.org. Eve and Heather, you're the best. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.